Welcome back to the Digital Underground podcast here in Black Hat in Las Vegas. Day two, just about in the books here, trying to sort of look back on what we've seen in the 2 days that we've been here. There was some interesting talks today that I went to two this morning that I think probably going to have a pretty big effect. One was the sort of a look behind the operation that took down the CryptoLocker infrastructure, which didn't get as much attention. It was related to the Game Over Zeus takedown, which in, you know, us and a lot of other people kind of focus on the Game Over Zeus part of it. And we're like, oh yeah, by the way, it also like disrupted the CryptoLocker ransomware operation. And so the two guys that gave this talk were involved in this working group that was sort of tracking the group behind CryptoLocker, looking at the domain generation algorithm, looking at the C2 infrastructure, the whole thing, working with law enforcement, kind of a really big working group. A lot of times those things are like 30 people or something. They said this was like 160 people around the globe. And I don't even think that includes like the law enforcement agencies or whatever. But they seem to have kind of learned a bunch of interesting things that they're going to be able to apply when the inevitable wave of other crypto ransomware pops up. You know, they reverse engineered the DGA and figured out that it was the same one that was used in this, that flashback OSX Trojan from a while ago, I think maybe last year or 2 years ago. And they were like, the way that they talked about it, they were pretty impressed with the operational security that this CryptoLocker gang had in terms of like their server infrastructure, the way that they handled everything, you know, the way that they wrote the malware, all this kind of stuff. They were like, you know, this is not a joke for these guys. And at the end of the talk, they dropped this weird little tidbit where they said CryptoLocker was a cash generating project for this group, that, and that cash was used for this other criminal enterprise that we're not allowed to talk about yet. Maybe later we'll tell you guys about it. And I was like, what the hell is that? You can't just like, you know, drop that thing in the punch bowl and then like not let us know. Like, what are they doing? Some sort of like, you know, global human trafficking operate. Like, what is going on there? But you know, there's, I guess, a long list of possibilities, but it doesn't really surprise me to see or hear about, you know, these cybercrime gangs tied in with maybe something that's a little more nefarious than that kind of stuff. You know, maybe drug trafficking, child exploit, something like that. You know, there's a lot of that kind of crossover, I think, that's probably going on.
I mean, a lot of these guys are just contractors. They get hired out to, you know, build different pieces for different campaigns. They might not even know what they're building for, big picture. But those behind the scenes talks are really cool when you can get into, you know, the mechanics of how they take down these things and you know, how they pick apart the command and control and the domain generation algorithms. Those things are really, you know, a lot of botnets use that just to help avoid detection. And, yep, you know, when you can learn more about them and apply them down the road, I think that's a big deal.
Yeah, because, well, I mean, we've already seen a couple of other crypto ransomware since then, like one, I think, for Android maybe, and another one on the desktop. So I imagine we're going to see a bunch more of these things. Like, it, you know, as they said, they were like, this is ransomware done right. Like, this is, if you're going to write ransomware, this is the way that you do it.
I mean, they must be making money. Otherwise, they wouldn't, you know, these different families, these different variants wouldn't keep popping up, and they do.
Oh, and they work.
Oh, yeah, they work.
Really work, and they're terrifying. I mean, people don't know what to do when that happens. Like, no. I think about it all the time. Like, if I got CryptoLocker on one of my machines, it would be a nightmare.
Yeah, you'd throw it away.
Yeah.
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 I mean, I would just go back to the most recent backup. It'd be like, all right, well, I'm going to lose some stuff, but, you know.
Right. And you hope you have that. Like, yeah, you know, a lot of people probably didn't. Like, they were hitting, you know, little small businesses and just regular internet users that got hit with Game Over Zeus. And then that, you know, that loads CryptoLocker.
Did they ever address whether or not paying them actually recovers your data?
Yeah, they did. That was actually the first thing that they talked about. They were like, these guys, you know, whatever you want to say about them, they followed through on their promises. If you paid them, you got the decryption key and you got your data back. They were like, that's the best thing we'll say about these guys.
Classy guys.
Yeah, super classy cybercrime gang. But like towards the end of the talk, they put up a bunch of email messages that they got. It wasn't totally clear to me whether these were messages that they got as like the researchers got as part of the working group or that the cybercrime gang got that they found later on the seized hard drives, which I think it might have been that. But one was from like the single mother was like, you know, I work 50 hours a week, 7 days a week. You know, I have three kids. This is my work computer. I can't have it. You know, this can't happen to me. Please help me. I can't afford the $300 or whatever. And they were like, you know, these are the kind of things that kind of spurred us on to like really slash and burn on these guys and just smash their infrastructure. Because, you know, one of the guys was like, these guys are the worst of the worst, like absolute bottom feeders.
Where again were the speakers from?
One guy, John Bambanek, I hope I pronounced your name right, John, is a independent. He runs his own cybersecurity consulting company. And the other guy, Lance James, was from Deloitte & Touche. But he had worked at Damballa and a few other places. You know, he's, you know, old school threat researcher, you know, kind of involved in these investigations. So they'd seen these other working groups come and go. And, you know, there was one for Configure. That was the first one I remember hearing about.
That's the first
one, yeah. And there's like ad hoc ones that pop up from mailing lists and things like that among all these researchers. But this seems to have been one of those things where they all came together and were like, all right, let's, you know, let's burn this thing down. Like this thing is ridiculous. You know, this thing is ruining people's lives. Like, you know, people lose jobs over that kind of crap, you know?
The fact that they're paying, that they're coming through with a promise is really against the norm of these things.
Yeah.
Because a lot of experts, our guys included, just say don't pay them because you're not going to get the uninstalled directions or you're not going to get the crypto key. You know, basically your only resort there is backup. And if you don't have a backup, then you're in real trouble.
Yeah, that was the other thing. They talked about all the messages they got from people who were like, can you help me recover my files? And they're like, no. But can we please have some of your data, you know, let us know how this happened to you, all that kind of stuff. So we can try and figure out a way, like, you know, we're trying to track these guys down and, you know, that's not going to help you right now. You're screwed. I'm sorry. But, you know, don't click on attachments that say there's some UPS shipping bill for something that you didn't order.
Yeah.
Which seems like, you know, it's good advice. So otherwise today, Brian, you went to talk about some medical device security stuff. That's I feel like that's one of those things we're going to hear way more about in the next few years.
Yeah, this was cool. It wasn't really like a proper talk. It was a round table. So it was like the whole – and it was crowded. I mean, it was in a smaller room, and it was completely full, and everybody was joining in on the conversation. And it basically it was Jay Radcliffe from – I think he works for Rapid7, but I'm not 100% sure about that. But, you know, he basically came out and was like, look, all this business about, like, a hacker sneaking in and, you know, killing someone with their laptop by making their pacemaker or their, you know, insulin injector go haywire is, like, you know, if you're Dick Cheney. So a few years ago, Dick Cheney, like, very the vice president, Dick Cheney, very famously got his pacemaker taken out, presumably to have one put in that was, you know, not connected. And he was saying, you know, if you're Dick Cheney, you know, that might be a good idea. But if your doctor says we should put an embedded insulin injector in your kid with type 1 diabetes, do it. Because, I mean, the things are incredibly safe, medically speaking. Communication-wise, they, you know, there are some issues, but the likelihood of someone coming within 50 feet of you and, you know, messing with your pacemaker or your insulin injector are incredibly low. He said at one point that he's much more likely to be killed by someone sneaking up behind him and bashing his head in with a baseball bat.
We all are.
But the cool thing about the talk was someone in the crowd said, you know, I feel like what's more dangerous, and Radcliffe agreed, would be if someone hacked into and tampered with your medical files, and then when you went to the doctor and they, you know, reconfigured your insulin pump or whatever, or like, you know, gave you the wrong dosage of some drug you're taking, that's much more of a risk than this glitzy stuff you always hear about, you know, on the Today Show about, you know, your pacemaker can get hacked. But he also, another cool thing he said was that the term medical devices is like almost as useless as the term cyber now, because it refers to everything from an insulin pump to an echocardiogram machine to an MRI machine to, you know, the XP system that they've got at the hospital that's running the, like, you know, machine that makes you breathe.
Right.
That's the scariest part of it all.
Yeah. Yeah. It means everything and nothing.
Yeah.
It encompasses all devices that live in a medical facility.
Yeah. So, I mean, his basic point was, you know, yeah, risk is increased by having medical devices that are connected, both risk to personal security and to data security and privacy, but also they're so safe and they're so much better than the old fashioned way of you know, pacemaking and doing insulin pumps, and even older, like, you know, MRI and X-ray machines, that, you know, it's sort of all doesn't really balance out, but it's you're increasing risk and safety at the same time, so it's hard to say what you should do about it.
Right. Yeah. I feel like, you know, there's definitely been some of those talks here in the last few years with, you know, the pacemaker stuff and insulin pumps, and you know, I know Barnaby was doing some of that stuff in the last few years, and it's cool. I love that kind of stuff because it shows these manufacturers, like, listen, these are great devices, but there's some things you might not have thought about. You know, here's some issues you need to kind of consider.
Yeah, and we got really deep into, like, the whole liability issue. Like, so say there's a bug in an MRI machine that's leaking data. Who's responsible for fixing that?
Yeah.
Is it the hospital or is it the manufacturer? And apparently the FDA put out some guidance in 2009 that was, like, both.
No.
So it just made it even harder. So what happens is that the manufacturer comes in, the hospital's got to pay the manufacturer if they have the budget to do it, or they just sit on it. And he was saying Radcliffe buys like used equipment online. Okay. And he'll, like, cook this stuff up and it'll just have, like, all this information still on it. So, like, the regulatory framework for it's a mess. Some of these companies don't even know who regulates them. Like, it could be the FDA, it could be the DHS, it could be the FCC in certain cases.
Oh God. Yeah, I can't imagine people are updating the firmware on their MRI machines all that often.
No. Or deleting the information that's stored on it.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure those things have large type hard drives that are attached to them that are storing every scan that's ever been made on them.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, they're not flushing that stuff every day.
At least it's one area where they're not being reactive to something. I mean, they're not waiting for something to happen. They're at least getting the word out that there's a problem and giving them the opportunity to fix it. Are they going to fix it? Who knows? But maybe they'll wait till there's that big insulin pump exploit. But
I mean, that's kind of the way that it's gone.
It's the way it is. Yeah.
Every other aspect of security, right? Like, something breaks catastrophically, and then people are like, "Oh my god, I had no idea this could happen."
Right.
And people, and, you know, the researchers are like, "We told you."
Yeah.
Like, you know, 3 years ago, we told you. Your stuff's terrible. You know, fix it. So on the good side, you know, it's not that often that you get talks at Black Hat where people have positive news. It's usually, you know, people breaking things, you know, showing off new bugs, all that kind of stuff. But I went to a talk this morning by Alex Stamos, who's the CISO at Yahoo, well-known guy in the security industry who's, I think, been at Yahoo for 5 or 6 months now. And in that time has done some pretty remarkable stuff, like to change their security. You know, I don't know how much credit he should get for the encryption of the backbone. I think they were probably working. That's not something you turn on overnight, but that happened under his watch a couple months ago. So they're encrypting, you know, the links between their data centers and all their backbone connections, which is a big deal when you're talking about, like, dragnet surveillance stuff. That's, you know, the best defense that a company of that size has against that stuff. And he was talking about a lot of the security improvements that they're working on, one of which is by sometime next year. He didn't say exactly when, he just said 2015, Yahoo's going to turn on end-to-end encryption for all of Yahoo Mail users, which is a big deal. So they're not, it's not like they're going to, you know, give everybody a copy of desktop PGP and tell them how to use it. They're going to have this thing enabled so that when you write a message in Yahoo Mail, it's encrypted and then sent, you know, if you're sending it to a Gmail user, it's encrypted all the way through. And that's a huge win. I don't know how many Yahoo Mail users there are, but it's a lot. You know, it's not Gmail.
I have a Yahoo Mail account.
So do I. Yeah. Yep. It's, you know, it's like my fantasy football account or exactly. something. But, you know, it's a lot of people, and that's a big win for users. You know, it's not something they're going to have to really worry about. It's just going to work the way that he described it. So, that, I mean, that's a huge thing. It really is. I'm pretty impressed with the kind of progress he's made there in that short amount of time.
Yeah, and they lagged behind for so long on encryption stuff. And, I mean, people were beating them up, Segoyan, EFF, all of those advocacy type of groups. They were really on Yahoo about cleaning up their act with crypto. And in the last, you know, 12 months or so, they've really brought themselves up to at least an even keel with Google and some of the other folks that have been doing it for a lot longer.
Yep.
And they said, like, you know, maybe 6 months ago, we're going to encrypt everything in the next, you know, year or two maybe. And I remember either Segoyan or Schneier at the Security Analyst Summit was like, I'll believe it when I see it. And it seems like they're now following through on it.
Yeah. I think, I mean, that might have been before Alex was hired or right afterwards. But, yeah, huge amount of progress. And he also listed a bunch of other things they're working on, like HSTS for their servers, so that, you know, that essentially tells web browsers, like, we only want to communicate over HTTPS,
right.
Which is a great thing. And a bunch of other things are working on certificate transparency as well. So a bunch of other really good stuff happening there, which is, you know, there were people clapping in the talk. Like, that doesn't, you know, usually it's just people going like, like groaning about some terrible bug or some awful security failure. But there were, like, you know, smiles in the talk, which, you know, you don't really see at Black Hat too often.
Yeah. It's a big deal. It's something that everybody uses. And, you know, when you can at least bring it up to a minimum standard and then start building from there, which is what they've basically done now. It's a good thing.
Yeah, it is. I think it's great stuff. So, you know, pretty eventful 2 days here in Vegas. There's usually, by the time we get home on Friday, there's some other things that have happened. You know, the DEF CON is this weekend. Happy to say none of us are staying for that. It's just too chaotic and too long of a week if you stay for both of these things. So I assume there will be more news to come in the next few days. But overall, pretty good, pretty interesting news show for all of us. And thank you guys for listening.